Welcome to another episode of the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Today we are going to discuss coaching with talent gaps. We are joined by two great coaches. Loyola Chicago's Drew Valentine is joining us, as well as Vanessa McClendon, the founder of Northwest Magic.
Welcome to the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Here are your hosts, Dallin Cuff and Monica McNutt.
What's up, folks? Welcome to another episode of the Junior NBA Coaches Corner alongside the one, the only, the amazingly talented Monica McNutt. I'm simply Dallin Cuff. Mon, today we're talking coaching with talent gaps. It's interesting. As soon as I saw the topic and started thinking about it, I feel like as you get older in this, not just this business, but as a player too, you kind of forget how challenging it must be to coach with talent gaps. And you have that at every level. It exists all over the place. I just don't think about it.
See, and this is why you are so cerebral and talented and one of the most brilliant folks I've worked with.
All right, chill.
Because listen, my first thought was, I've been on both sides of the talent gap. One of the better players and one of the worst players. An interesting experience.
I feel you on that. I think I was always more on the weaker players. So I guess I didn't have that same thought process. So let's get some insight from coaches. We got two great guests coming up. First up, an assistant under Porter Moser, former assistant now. He helped Loyola Ramblers to the four consecutive seasons with at least 20 wins, including their magical run to that Final Four in the 17-18 campaign. Standout player at Oakland University in his own right, where he graduated as the school's winningest player. He spent time as a grad assistant at Michigan State under Tom Izzo and is now taking over in the head coaching position at Loyola Chicago and one of the youngest coaches, now 30, in the country, and Drew Valentine. Drew, thank you so much for joining us. Also, Vanessa McClendon, who played her college ball at Oregon, went on to play professionally in Europe for many years. She has made a name for herself as a top trainer and player development expert and is the owner and founder of the Northwest Magic. Welcome, Vanessa. Great to have you both on. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, great to be here as well. Thanks for having me on.
We're going to get into the topic a little more in depth, obviously, coaching with talent gaps. But Drew, I do want to just start with you. You know, taking over as a coach right now, it just now 30 years old. I mean, what had the last month or so been like for you as you have now stepped into this new role within the Ramblers program?
Yeah, it's been awesome. I think it's been, you know, an easier transition, I guess you could say, than some people, because I have familiarity with this place. I have continuity with the players. I have relationships and trust built up. I kept some of the staff that was already here. So we're kind of, you know, speaking the same language, and the expectations and the standards, you know, the players and the staff kind of already has an idea. And so with the culture that we established here, I'm in a great situation, I feel like, to where, you know, I can have success and hopefully continue the sustained success that we've built up here. So but it's been wild. I mean, doing stuff like this. You know, having to be the final decision maker on, you know, recruiting things, on, you know, just daily decisions, you know, the staff coming to me, and, you know, I kind of was the, you know, top assistant, I guess you could say, and the staff would kind of come to me to present the Porter, but it was always on him, you know, at the end of the day. And so now those things are on me. And so I guess, you know, that's what's been different. And we haven't gotten our newcomers here yet, where I have to teach, you know, the game from a head coach's perspective yet. And so just waiting for that. Can't wait for that. I'm super excited for that. But it's been a good transition. And I think, you know, the reason why it's been such a good one is just the familiarity that I have with this place.
That's awesome. I mean, I'm sure the future is so bright for you guys. That's going to be incredible for you to take over at the helm. But Vanessa, I want to spin this question to you. For Drew, obviously, like, it's kind of, I wouldn't say that it's a clear path, but I think if you dream of being a coach, you pursue coaching. But for you, when you started your organization, the Northwest Magic, what was your vision? What caused you to go that route?
It was because I've been where a lot of the players that I was meeting that want to go, I felt like I come from a background of teaching. My mom's a teacher. She's been a teacher for 40 years. So I have a natural instinct to want to teach. So, you know, back then I say, it wasn't really called training. I was really just teaching. Mm-hmm. And what I found was I would teach and then I would go watch them play and they weren't really applying what we were teaching. So then I wanted to be more hands-on. So that kind of started the whole wheel going. And so I would get a group of girls, and initially the plan was I'd take a group of girls and I'd take them all the way through the process and get them to where they want to be. And then it didn't quite work out that way. you know, someone has a friend who has another friend, and can she join one team, turn to two, turn to three, and then, mm-hmm. you know, fast forward, you have 20 teams. So, but that's the concept it started with for sure.
It's funny, you guys both just touched on the thing about being the head person. You know, the buck stops with you guys. Ultimately, you got, whether it's 20 teams or Drew's got his program, the buck kind of stops with you. But you mentioned an interesting thing, Vanessa, I want to ask you about. You went in, you wanted to be a teacher. You said your mom's a teacher for 40 years. My mom's a teacher for 40 years as well. It's the most important profession I think there is. And coaching is part of that too. But coaches aren't just teachers. I mean, you're motivators, you're psychologists, as we'll touch on with the talent gaps. How do you view yourself, and how much time do you spend thinking about just the coaching part or just people's mentality? Like, how do you balance all the coaches have to do, Vanessa?
You know, I compartmentalize because each stage is different. So each stage has different needs. When kids come to us, we have a head start K through third. You know, we want them to just love the game, play for fun. And then we're really teaching that. Of course, there are certain skills we want them to have to move to the next. But really, our phase is play for fun. And then we teach them to play for t-shirts, really be competitive. And then we transition to playing for your scholarship. So each phase has its own unique teaching points. And so we just make sure we touch on that, and that they build off each skill to make sure they're prepared for the next level.
Drew, I'm curious, is that maybe not those exact same terminology in terms of the phases, but did you first kind of pick it up just because you loved it? When do you remember competing for a scholarship and an opportunity to allow the game to help shape your future?
Right. I was lucky enough to have kind of, you know, strong people kind of like Vanessa. I mean, that's so awesome, kind of what you touched on. My mother as well was a teacher for 35 years. So we're
about kind of this.
My mom is still currently a teacher. Let me just complete the.
Yeah. No way.
Wow. Right. There's a study going on right now. I think we need to tap into that.
So. Right. Yeah. But my dad was a teacher as well, and was a high school coach. But once my brother and I, once we started, you know, getting to, you know, second, third grade, he started coaching us. And so he kind of set those foundations of fundamentals, as far as, you know, learning how to shoot a layup with your right hand, left hand, and ball handling, you know, those kind of things, you know, on the floor. But, you know, as I got older, my parents told me when I was in seventh grade, they said, you know, we really want you to go to college, but you got to get a scholarship some way. I mean, you either got to get it through academics or you got to get it through basketball or football, because I play football too. So when I was 12, I was like, all right, it's go time. So I kind of locked in and wanted to chase my dreams. So that's kind of, you know, I learned the fundamentals, you know, from a young age, you know, and you know, competition, kind of like Vanessa touched on. But then seventh grade kind of kicked it into high gear and started trying to train like a pro.
You had a great career at Oakland. You went on to be a grad assistant at Michigan State under Coach Izzo, and then obviously with Porter Moser and the stuff you guys have accomplished there. With this topic, and we're talking about talent gaps, when did you start to really think about that as a coach, as you started your coaching journey? And how did Coach Izzo and how did Coach Moser address those issues, and how did that rub off on you?
Right. I mean, obviously, you know, like you guys said to start this, right? You get on both sides or one side, of that spectrum. And when you get to college, right? Like, I think all of us, you know, as we're, you know, probably the best players in our areas and things like that in high school. So you're kind of one of the better players. But then when you get to, you know, that next level, it kind of humbles you, right? So you got to kind of figure out how to get as a player. You got to try to, you know, figure out how to be different, how to stand out. What can I do to, you know, close that talent gap and get myself on the floor? So you kind of learn that as a player. And then I think that makes it an easier transition as a coach. You know, me personally, before I get into the others, you know, I'm all just about controlling what you can control. And we actually had my team, we're doing like two guest speakers a week right now, where we got different people from different spectrums of the basketball industry, or even just, you know, regular, you know, people, business people or different people in the community we've had on speak. And we had actually Cassius Winston came on, former Michigan State guard. And he talked about you know, the transition from his freshman year to his sophomore year at Michigan State. And he said something awesome to me, which is, you know, I'm going to do everything I can, my destiny. I'm going to take control of my destiny and take control of my greatness. And you see how his career has kind of taken off. And that's kind of, you know, how I feel and felt as a player, is you got to control your own destiny and put in the work. So I kind of echo that to our players. If you're not, you know, spending time on your game individually outside of team practice and doing what you can to your body, doing what you can with nutrition, doing what you can, you know, with your mental health, you know, I just think sacrifice and work ethic is a huge piece of that. And then, you know, one thing that I think, you know, Coach Moser does a great job of is he talks about bringing value, right? Bringing value, no matter what your role is. And, you know, we glorify things like that. You know, after the games, we might, you know, the guys that are walk-ons or are not, you know, playing, you know, we might give them in the scouting report, we might give them a specific play, like a late game, you know, ATO or specialty action that an opponent runs. And we might say, hey, when this play comes, you guys got to call it out. And those guys take pride in it. You know, we glorify them. We, you know, make them feel loved and like they've done something, you know, after the game, like right in front of the whole team. So just, you know, making people feel valued. And then, you know, creating that family is something that I learned from Michigan State. Sorry, I'm giving such a long-winded answer.
That's great.
Creating that family atmosphere where everybody, you know, feels like they're, you know, a part of something great is what happens at Michigan State. That's why, you know, the former players always come back. You know, like Draymond Green just tweeted at, you know, the incoming freshmen, Jay Dinkins and Max Christie, like, welcome to the family, young Kings. Like, he just tweeted that out the other day. And when you create that family, like, everybody feels like they have a special role within that family. And so I think that internal family mixed in with, you know, controlling your own destiny and then making people feel valued within their roles is kind of what I've, you know, kind of the mix of things that I've tried to learn and try to, you know, carry on with my program now.
I love the value piece. I think that's so important, because when I feel valued and there's an established relationship of trust, then I'm willing to go the extra length on behalf of my teammates. But Vanessa, what does that look like for you? Because you've got teams, you're training these young women. They are with you for a season, but they are all competing to get their collegiate opportunity. And I think there probably is a different urgency as you kind of navigate which young ladies really, really want it. And then there probably is still also a range in talent as well. So how do you navigate that space with your young women?
Yeah, I mean, very similar to what Drew mentioned. It's really being part of something bigger, having them buy into, we have a saying, a magic together family. So, you know, people want to be a part of what they're doing. They know individually, or they know together, they can achieve their individual goals. So we talk individual goals, we talk team goals, but ultimately everyone gets a scholarship. That's kind of our, everyone signs, you know, whatever level. There's so many colleges out there. There's so many opportunities out there. We're going to find the right fit for you, but you need your sisters together to make that happen. So really it's buying into a system, working on your individual game to get better. Everyone gets 1% better each week, each month. You know, and if they buy into that, people are prideful about where they stand in their position and their role. And then one year may be different from the next year, you know, because people's roles change, or as people graduate, they can aspire. The younger kids can aspire to take that spot, especially put something in front of them. But that's the biggest thing, working on your individual game and trusting your family and your teammates to help you get to where you want to go. So,
Vanessa, I know, and obviously when I played AAU at times, there were guys going from a Nike team to an Adidas team within 2 weeks. Like, there was movement everywhere. And I think you see that now, obviously, in college basketball, the transfer rule. And I'm a proponent of the transfer rule, but I think obviously that's a reflective little bit about society. So when you're dealing with players that may not, when things don't come easy to a lot of younger people, they may not want to do them anymore. So how do you manage that or keep them in your family and tell you, I got the best path for you? How do you keep them on board?
Yeah, and that's a great question, and it's so true. And I learned later, probably about the last 7-8 years, it's really about when we first meet the player, we meet the player, we meet the parents, we talk about their individual goal, and we show them you know, how that could work within our program. Now, it doesn't work for everybody, but we probably keep 90% of our players because we're invested in, we will support them to get to their goal. It's not about, you know, a lot of our players get to the next level and they'll stay. A lot of our players understand how to get recruited, how to do the research, understand, you know, their impact players when they first come. So we do a lot of work early so they trust in what they're doing and they understand it's an individual goal. Now, if they go somewhere else and do that same thing, it's going to work. That's what we're telling them. But what we're telling them, we'll support you, put you in the right position, put you in the right light so you can achieve your goal. And that's part of it, the communication piece early and the buying into the system. So, and we have a saying that we grow our elite players. They don't come this way. But by the time they leave us, they're prepared and they're ready to play at the college level. So we get a lot of our kids in fourth and fifth grade and they go all the way through our program.
Now for both of you, and Drew, we'll take it to you first. Like you said, we've all been on the spectrum and everybody on this call probably at one point was the best player. Some of us longer than others, but there is a such thing as natural gifts, abilities, and a talent for the game. So when you are looking at your team and you've got your best player, of course, we all love the stories in the media that your best player is also always your hardest worker, but that is not always the case. So how do you work with your kid who, if this kid is on, we on a team, we as a team are in the best place. How do you keep that player engaged, accountable, and connected to their teammates if they have a significant amount of talent, significant more amount of talent?
Well, I just think you have to set an example. You have to coach the best player hardest. And I know that might be kind of an old school kind of a way, but that's what, you know, that's what I've learned. It sets the table for everybody else. Now, I think in the background, you also have to meet with that player individually and you have to bring him into the office and say, listen, man, like if I can't hold you accountable, then we're not going to win. And winning is what's going to set you up to put yourself in the best position, you know, individually, you know, through team success comes individual accolades. And, you know, when you get people to buy in and believe that, then you can set that example and the guys or gals will look around and be like, man, like if he's getting or she's getting coached hard like that and getting held accountable, then it makes it sets the table easy for everybody else. And I think, you know, one thing you got to do is you just got to tell the truth to people and people really respect the truth, whether they, you know, don't like it at that time or whether they can't handle it. But if you can tell them the truth and, you know, it doesn't have to be delivered in a forceful way every time, you can, you know, bring them into the office and show them with film. You can show them, bring them to the office and show them with stats. You can, you know, show examples of, you know, what another elite player that's, you know, playing with the high motor or, you know, you can show interviews of an elite player talking about their work ethic. So I think there's ways in which you can, you know, go behind the scenes, you know, to get that player to trust and buy in. And then when you're in front of the team, you can, you know, hold them accountable. And it's like I said, it sets the table for everybody else.
I feel like I know you, Drew. It's very similar. It comes down to the relationship piece. I often sit down with my best players and tell them what the expectation is. And not only that, sometimes they need to know that eyes are on them. So I'm using you as an example and I need you to set the bar because, you know, if you set the bar, then everyone else will raise up, you know, to that level. So it's really communicating with them what their position is, who they are, the impact they have on the team and the program, and putting that responsibility on them. And most of them like it. Most of them, you know, they thrive. You know, it's kind of an honor to be that girl, you know. So giving them that, that's part of it. So I think that's huge.
I do want to ask one other question because my personal experience, we had a coaching change from my freshman to sophomore year. I mean, Vanessa, you were on the call there at Columbia University. You were 2-25 my first year. It was a nightmare of an experience. But we have a new coach come in, Joe Jones, who's now at BU, great guy. And he had a player on our team that was clearly the most physically gifted player. Could run all day, could jump higher. He was a high major player. And coach was trying to put that onus on him. But he was not going to raise to that level. And it was very clear to all of us that was not going to be the case. And at some point, coach moved on and there were other better players that emerged to be our best players. So if either one of you added that situation where the player doesn't respond and the talent gap isn't really what's going to make you guys win games, there might be other guys are going to do different stuff. Drew, have you ever experienced or seen something like that? And how do you handle that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the biggest thing to successful, you know, businesses, successful programs is just the culture that you build up. And I think, you know, it's a little bit different, you know, on my end, because, you know, you can select, I guess you can say, that the people that you offer scholarships to or bring into your program. So I think you really need to, you know, really evaluate, you know, the people that you bring in, you know, more importantly than just the players, but evaluate the people. And so we use a bunch of different things to evaluate them. But, you know, I think the most important thing is, like you said, if you're not gonna, you know, buy in, then it's time to move on, because you don't ever want to compromise, you know, your standards or your culture as a coach, you know, because that's when, you know, you're not being truthful. Like we said, telling the truth is the most important thing. And, you know, you might not be able to tell the truth to one person, but if you can tell the truth to 12 and have that good culture, like you know, our Final Four team was, we didn't have one dunk in the whole NCAA tournament. We had, you know, one guy that was, you know, a borderline NBA player, but we made the Final Four because we had everybody that was pulling in the same direction. We weren't the most talented. We weren't the biggest. We weren't the most athletic. But I think that just goes to show you that when you've got that culture, that foundation, and those standards in place, that's the most important thing.
I piggyback on what Drew said as far as not sacrificing the culture. I've experienced that so many times. There's players that probably feel like they've outgrown our program or their team, and the light or the grass seems greener over there. And so we lose players to that concept. But what we coach the kids in front of us, and sometimes it's for the best, because it's true to have 12 players that are all in versus 10 that are in and 2 that are kind of on the fence, especially if they're the top players. So sometimes it's for the best just to coach the kids in front of you and let those players go, those more talented players go. And it seems most teams are more successful that way when everyone's buying in, so.
Okay. Got it. Okay. So now I'm curious from a coaching standpoint about the other end of the spectrum. I mean, you've got a kid that you can push and you can see the potential in, and then maybe you've got the kid with a great personality that works really hard. Like, and you're responsible for everybody in between. So when you're dealing with the lower talent levels on a team, how do you encourage and make sure that they're growing, but also keeping the entire unit on the right pace, Vanessa?
It's a different conversation at every level. Mm. So obviously you can just be frank and have an adult conversation with your pro players and your college players. This is where you are. This is in front of you, you know, and kind of, this is what path you want to take to move where you want to move. And, you know, as adults, older kids, you know, they can take that and run with it. But, you know, for our younger kids, team of 10, you know, 1 through 6 are about similar skill level. Then you have the 7, 8, 9 or different. It's just about the conversation is development, 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 and then team concept stuff. So, you do it when your minute's called, when your name is called, when your number's called, you get in the game and do your job. So, you know, the dialogue is just different at each level.
What about for you, Drew?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you just got to make sure, you know, that you know, there's small victories. I think you got to glorify or hype up those small victories, you know. And I think, you know, giving them, you know, making them feel valued in front of their peers is something that, you know, somebody struggling with some self-confidence is something that can go a long way. So taking a charge in practice, like, did you guys see that? This guy's been watching, like, this is why, you know, and then maybe that might translate to him making another play. And then, all right, man, let's put him in the game and see what happens. So mm-hmm. I think you got to kind of just like, whenever you see somebody that might not be as high of a talent level, I mean, you got to amplify those small victories with them and you know, maybe give them an opportunity, give them some, you know, playing time or something like that. You know, give them a, throw them a bone, I guess you could say.
That's great.
Good stuff, guys. We appreciate your time. This is a really interesting conversation. I think it's a topic that, like I said, to start the show, I don't think a lot of people, and I'm involved in the game, but I'm not coaching the game. And I don't think we think about it in the same context. So I think as you're speaking to other coaches, hopefully there's some very relatable stuff and some good advice as a lot of coaches are watching and listening to this podcast.
No, for sure. I really appreciate you guys having me on. This is awesome. Vanessa, congrats on everything you've accomplished and looking forward to seeing more greatness come from you.
Well, thank you. And happy birthday and well wishes for your baby girl. And it was great meeting everyone today. Thanks, guys.
Add, create value. Make sure people know that they are valuable. That would be the nugget that I'm holding from both of you as we all pull in the right direction toward our goals. On the next episode of the Junior NBA Coaches Corner, we discuss how to peak at the right time.
And here to help us break that down are Patrick Mutombo, head coach of Raptors 905, the G League, and Wendy Gatlin, the director of girls basketball at the Pacers Athletic Center.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Monica and Dallin each week on the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. For more, go to juniornba.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.